welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levionier, for an hour of romance. In a while, we'll hear movie actress Greer Garson on the Academy Award Theater, but right now it's the show, Romance, an episode heard on CBS on July 9th, 1951, taking over for The Lux Show, which you'll hear details about in a moment. The story, overseen by Gunsmoke writer John Meston, is The Sword and the Knitting Needle.
Romance. Bringing you the finest stories of the world's greatest authors. Stories of the courage, the devotion, the adventure of love, all strung on the bright thread of romance. Tonight, we take you to the blue waters of the Caribbean and a tropical island ruled by a beautiful woman, as Anthony Ellis tells it in his unusual love story, The Sword and the Knitting Needle.
I found out why February and March are the best months in the Bahamas. Because when I got there, it was July. Nassau was baking in 96 degrees after a hurricane which I'd been lucky enough to miss. I located the office I was looking for and went in. It wasn't any cooler inside, but at least there was no sun. Only a very fat gentleman, very hot and very English, fanning himself with a big manila envelope.
How do you do, sir?
You, Mr. Stewart?
Oh, no, my dear fellow. I'm Mr. Watling. Mr. Stewart is his junior partner. Mr. Minges is our America partner. Watling, Minges, and Stewart. Stewart, small print. You see?
Yeah. Oh, my name's Dowd, Daniel Dowd. Mr. Minges...
Oh, of course, yes. Yes, Mr. Minges wired to me that you were on your way. Do sit down.
Thanks.
I trusted you had a pleasant trip from Miami.
Yes, fine, thanks.
Where did I put that? Here it is. Now, sir, I assume that Mr. Minges told you nothing.
Nothing. Gave me a check for $1,000 and said you'd take care of me here.
Exactly. Now, sir, let me see. You have a boat, diving equipment, and a crew of five.
That's it. What's the job?
Ah, that is the point, Mr. Dowd. That is the point. I haven't the foggiest notion. Not the foggiest.
Are you kidding?
Allow me. I am a solicitor. I represent the interest here in Nassau of Miss Elizabeth Linden. Now, as you know, Mr.
Minges... I know about Mr. Minges. Please, go on.
Miss Linden owns an island some 100 miles southeast of here, Amos Island. It's exactly here on the map. See? Amos Island.
Uh-huh.
Miss Linden instructed me to instruct Mr. Minges in Miami to hire an expert diver and crew to go to Amos Island. Now, you are an expert diver, Mr. Down.
I make a living.
Exactly. Now, sir, did Mr. Minges inform you as to the amount for the task?
No, how could he? He didn't know what was to be done.
Yes, of course. And neither do I. Well, Miss Linden didn't see fit to confide in me. However, shall we say an additional $1,500 to be paid at the conclusion of your work?
Well, let's say $1,500 now, and I'll let you know if it's going to be more when I find out what the job is.
Well, I'm not sure if Mr. Minges...
Look, Mr. Minges said as far as he was concerned, the whole thing was a lot...
Mr. Minges and Miss Linden do not exactly see eye to eye. I agree to your terms, Mr. Dowd.
Okay. When do you want me to leave?
As soon as possible. Miss Linden doesn't like to be kept waiting.
All right.
Mr. Dowd, you may find Miss Linden a trifle strange.
Nuts?
Good heavens, no. No. Willful, perhaps. Yes. She's immensely wealthy.
Oh, sure, yeah. I get it.
Yeah, I don't think so, but you may. Well... Bon voyage, Mr. Dowd. Please give my...
You forgot something, Mr. Watling.
Huh?
$1,500. Now.
Oh, by Jove. By Jove, so I did. By Jove.
We got out of the harbor that afternoon, and I set the course for Amos Island. The sea was easy in the night. I took my turn at the wheel and listened to Cookie telling the stars about his troubles. Except for Cookie, I'd taken on a scrap crew in Miami. There was Jack Millard, and he'd done some diving, Pigeon Ailer, and Ed Brown. I didn't know much about them, but, well, it was a crew. We sighted Amos Island the next morning at dawn, and a couple of hours later dropped the hook at the east end.
Kind of pretty, huh?
Yeah, good protection here. We ought to be snug. Naylor!
Yeah?
Put the dinghy over. I'm going ashore.
Okay.
Want me to come along?
Yeah, if you want.
Oh, sure.
Hey! Looks like you got a visitor.
Now, hold the dinghy.
Yeah. Heading out from the jetty. Looks like a dinghy.
Get the ladder over, will you?
Hey, ladder! Female pipe!
Come on, Jack, the ladder.
Okay.
A couple of minutes later, she tied up alongside and came aboard. I remember thinking then that it was funny. Those two West Indian boys who stayed in the launch. They wore what looked like a kind of uniform. But I forgot about them when she came on deck. I guess you could forget about anything with her around.
Mr. Dowd, I'm Elizabeth Linden. Mr. Watling radioed me you were coming. I expected you sooner.
Well, I'm sorry, miss. We hit foul weather out of Miami.
Before you go ashore, I'd like to speak to you. In your cabin, please.
Okay. Now, watch your head.
Close the door.
It's hot.
Isn't it? The door, please. You may sit down, Mr. Dowd.
Thanks.
Before I tell you about the job, I think that we'd better understand each other.
It's all right with me.
First of all, I own this island.
Yeah, that's what I was told.
I own it, Mr. Dowd, the way you own your boat. When you're at sea, you are the sole government, captain, king, dictator. Is that correct?
If you want to put it that way.
I do. On my island, it's exactly the same. When you and your crew set foot on it, I wish it clearly understood that I am the government. There are no men in command.
Sure. Okay.
Don't humor me, Mr. Dowd. I bought this island because I had to find a place where man almighty wouldn't botch things up. Where a woman could have some respect. And not by having babies or washing dishes, darning socks, scrubbing floors, cooking, sewing, changing...
No, I'm not arguing.
I'm glad. That'll make it easier. The job will necessitate your living on the island. Inform your crew that if there is any trouble, I shall have them locked up. I have a police force for just such emergencies.
There won't be any trouble.
You and your men will be confined to your quarters, except when you're working. This island is peaceful and happy. It's going to stay that way.
Miss Linden, what's the job?
There is a deep lagoon on the other side of the island. One of my fishermen discovered an old ship lying on the bottom. I sent a boy down to investigate. He said there was a large bell on the deck. He couldn't stay down long enough to dislodge it.
You brought me out here to raise a bell?
Yes.
That's all?
Yes.
You expect me to believe that?
What you believe or disbelieve, Mr. Dowd, is really no concern of mine.
A bell?
A bell.
Okay. Okay, I'll bring it up.
You can send your equipment ashore. We'll have it carried across the island.
Fine.
I think that's all then, Mr. Dowd. The financial arrangements have been made with Mr. Watling.
They have.
Are there any questions, Mr. Dowd?
Maybe one. How come someone that looks like you shuts herself up in a place like this? And I don't mean that feminist malarkey either. She didn't answer, just gave me a dirty look and went up on deck. It was afternoon before we got the diving equipment ashore and had our first look at the job on the other side of the island. She went with us, and so did four of her dolled-up West Indians.
That's a lagoon, miss?
Yes, Mr. Millard.
Yeah, it must have been a bay once. Sandbar built up and made a lagoon.
Yeah, a long time ago.
I have some old charts of the island. It was a bay in the early 18th century.
Uh-huh.
We can bring a skiff around and get it over the bar. I imagine you can use it.
Look, Miss Linden, you want me to do the job? Okay, you let me worry about how I'm going to do it.
I... You'll start in the morning.
If I can, yes.
And we may as well go back if there's nothing else you want to see.
Okay. All right, let's head back.
Mr. Dodd.
Yeah.
If you care to dine with me, dinner is at 7.
What about the other guys?
What about them?
Oh, I get it. Heads of the government only. No peasants. Okay. Our quarters were all right. The huts were native made, but clean and comfortable. I began to see what she meant about the peace and happiness of the island. It was there, all around. The islanders couldn't do enough for us. But all the time, I knew we were being watched. It bothered me, but not for long. The way she looked at that dinner, I fixed that. And afterwards, sitting on the patio with brandy and coffee, the smell of the sea, the night, and her perfume. I was liking this job. For a girl who didn't think much of men, my employer had a funny way of showing it.
More coffee?
No, thanks. You know something? I think maybe you're human.
I'm sorry. I was rude today. You see, I make it a point to misjudge men when I meet them. Then I don't make many mistakes.
Well, you're lucky.
Men have their place. Don't misunderstand me.
I won't.
You, for instance, Mr. Dodd.
Well, thanks. Am I going to be your prime minister?
You're a very attractive man. I'm not unaware of that. But you see, it doesn't make me turn to a quivering mass of female emotions.
Yeah, I can see that.
On the other hand, I'm a normal, healthy human.
Miss Linden, how long has it been since you've been kissed?
How dare you?
Oh, come on. The dinner, all this, that perfume. Of course, if you want to make a proclamation and issue a command in triplicate, I'll wait.
You're so sure, aren't you? Arrogant, insufferable, swaggering, bumptious, insolent.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, you... Stop it, stop it.
Didn't like it, huh?
You may go now.
Listen, just because some guy gave you a bad time, I was after your money. Oh, I hit on one, huh? Well, that's too bad. Baby got hurt, so she runs and hides in her own little sand.
Will you get out of here or must
I'm a man, that's all right, until I start to behave like one.
But you're quite finished.
Trouble with you is you got too much money and too much time to throw it away.
And I'm quite sure that you'd be happy to relieve me of most of it, Mr. Dowd.
Honey, right now I wouldn't trade a bottle of Johnny Walker for any part of you. And after this little party, that's what I need most. You ought to be very happy you're only playing like a man. Otherwise, I'd knock your pretty teeth right down your throat. Good night. Out in the bay, I heard Cookie telling his sad story to the stars. A breeze had come up, and as I walked back to my hut, I felt something different in the air. It was quiet, but there was trouble, too. I didn't know how much until the next day. The morning after we arrived, we began work, raising the old ship's bell for Elizabeth Linden. I hoped it'd be a good one, because if that's all she wanted, it was costing $2,500. We took a double ender we carried around the island, dragged her over the sandbar into the lagoon, put the air pump aboard, and we're ready. I went down first to look around. Millard and Naylor stayed topside, pumping. I hit bottom about 20 feet from the wreck.
Anything down there?
Water. Give me more line.
You got it.
Yeah, she's about a third buried, almost on her beam end. You'll have to haul up when I give the word.
Okay. What is she, Dan?
Hard to tell. Might be a brig from a cut.
Any cannon?
How do I know? I start heaving. About 10 feet, then stop.
Right.
Hold it.
Okay.
Yeah. Black off. I can see the bell all right. Big one.
Can you get in the cabin?
I don't know. I'll have to use a torch on this baby. From the looks of it, she weighs a ton.
Want me to lower it?
Not yet. I'm coming up first. Let's go.
It wasn't going to be as easy as I thought. It'd be tricky work to cut the bell away from the frame, and it wasn't going to be any fun if it fell off the ship to the bottom. How we were going to get the bell up if and when we secured it was something else. I smoked a cigarette and thought about it. That's when Millard said...
We've been thinking, Dan. Pidge, Ed, me.
Yeah.
Suppose there's something else down there.
Such as?
Well, you know, all those stories about the old days in the Caribbean.
A pirate, treasure? Dream some more.
Why not? That hulk's ours, right us out.
Miss Linden found it. The lagoon isn't part of the sea. It's part of her island.
Look, who's to know? So we get the bell up, and if there's anything else...
Is that what's been on your mind?
What do you say, Dan?
Anything down there belongs to her.
It does
not. Come on, forget it, Pig. Just forget it. But Dan's boss on this job. Aren't you, Skipper?
I didn't like the way he smiled at me when he said that, and I knew that neither of them were forgetting anything. Well, I made a couple of more trips down to get the lay of the land and began to cut away the frame. It took a long time, and I wasn't more than half through when it got dark and time to quit. I told Miss Linden how we were getting on, which took 5 minutes, and was all that I saw of her the whole day. That evening, I ate with a peasant. We turned in early. I wanted to be up with the light, get that bell off the wreck, and start back to Miami. But I didn't sleep. Try to think of everything else, but it always came back to her. For the first time, it bothered me. It wasn't a gag anymore. Needling her like last night. I wondered if she was awake. Crazy, spoiled kid. Remembering the color of her hair. Sound of her voice after I kissed her. That's about when the guns went off. I got into my clothes fast, but by the time I was out of my hut, two of her boys were already there. They didn't say anything, just stood and stared at me, kind of scared, until she came along.
I warned you, Mr. Dowd. I told you to tell your crew.
Take it easy. What happened?
Those three men of yours, they shot at my villagers.
Why?
That's what I want to know. What were they doing? Why were they out of their huts?
Well, you think I put them up to it?
I don't know, but they're under arrest.
Well, maybe one of your boys started it. Ever think of that?
I told you that unless on the job, you were all confined to your quarters. Your crew disobeyed that order.
I'm sick of this. Who do you think you are? Either you need someone to smack some sense
in
you...
That's enough!
Okay. Now call off your SS boys and let's find out what's going on.
We're going to find out. And until we do, you and your crew are prisoners.
You can't do that.
Can't I? Trespassing and assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill. Those are man-made laws, Mr. Dowd. I admit I had a moment's weakness last night. I behaved like a woman's expected to behave. But it was a purely biological weakness. I was right about you in the first place. You're unprincipled, deceitful, and underhanded.
Your slip's showing, Miss Napoleon. Which got me nowhere, because a couple of minutes later, I joined Millard, Naylor, and Brown in what passed for the local judge. It might have been funny hearing a woman talk like that, but she wasn't kidding. And I had a nasty feeling that she wasn't doing any more than she had a right to do. It was her island, and she made the law.
Nuts. There ain't no dame in the world going to push me around.
Yeah, I can see that. All right. What happened?
Well, taking a walk.
Oh, sure. And a gun went off by accident. You may not know it, but we're in trouble. Lots of trouble. Now, what happened?
Well, nobody got hit. What's the difference?
Who did it? Who fired?
I did. And so did you. There was a dozen of them.
What did you go out for?
Take a look around.
Shut up, Naylor.
You want to make me?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Forget it. Well, okay, Dan. We were going across the island. I was going to take a look at the wreck.
Now, you still got that treasure bug, huh?
Well, we figured if there was anything, you'd make us hand it over. So, what you didn't know...
Well, that's swell. Now what?
We're getting out of here, that's what. If she wants trouble, she's going to get it.
You figured a way to get out?
Don't worry, we will. And I'm going to get me a couple of those boys before I'm through.
Fine. Wake me up before you leave. Well, there wasn't anything else to do. I knew we were in there for the night anyway, so I went to sleep. Next morning, she sent for me. The other guys stayed where they were, and they didn't like it. I didn't either, because I had an idea when they got mad enough, they could bust out pretty easily. She was having breakfast when I told her how it happened.
That adds another charge, Mr. Dowd. If there were anything in that wreck, would it be piracy or larceny?
I don't know, but whatever you're going to do, you better make up your mind in a hurry. That cracker box you've got us in isn't going to hold them.
If they try to escape, my men have instructions to shoot.
Oh, now, look, they made a mistake. I'll take the responsibility. I'll pay a fine or whatever else you want, but don't start something you can't finish.
I will decide that.
Oh, honey.
Don't call me honey.
You know what that lawyer in Miami said about you, that Mr. Minji?
I'm not interested.
He said some man ought to drag you off by the hair, beat you for a month, and then if you turn into a normal woman, maybe marry you.
Really?
Now, look, you've had your fun.
What makes you think this is fun, Mr. Dowd? You can't believe that I'm serious about all this, can you? Your egotistical male mind can't believe it.
I'm getting sick of this. You're serious. Who are you kidding with that Gilbert and Sullivan army of yours? I know the natives around here. All they want to do is to be let alone. The only reason they haven't been hurt is because my crew isn't mad enough to cut loose. You're just itching for trouble.
You think so?
Yeah, I know your type. Spoiled, nasty brat. When you take the train, a compartment isn't good enough for you. You got to have a whole car. Well, honey, you've got to learn sometime, and now's about it.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. Suppose I take that neck of yours and give it a twist, and
I don't think you will. I just have to call and...
You wouldn't have time. I can almost reach you from here. What have I got to lose?
Sit down. I have a gun.
So what? Maybe I don't believe it's only a bell down there in that ship. Maybe it's something else, something worth fighting over.
I told you it was only the bell I wanted.
All the more reason to kill you. That makes me mad.
I'm warning you. Stay away.
Go ahead, shoot.
Mr. Dowd.
Go on.
I'll call for help.
Why? You've got a gun.
Get away.
You want to play like a man? This is your big chance. You're going to kill or be killed.
You wouldn't.
Sure I would. Give me that.
Oh, no.
Now, let's come down to earth. Sure, that's better.
You don't understand. I'm crying because I hate myself for not shooting you. For being a woman.
It doesn't make me mad.
Go away. Take your crew with you. Take your boat. Go away from me.
Miss Linda, Miss Linda, they have escaped. They beat John and running me down the head and took their gun. Miss Linden, what shall we do?
It doesn't matter. Tell the others to stay out of their way.
Decline and fall of the Linden Empire. Or maybe it's like a lifesaver with only the hole left.
Please go away. Please.
After seeing the behavior of one of her elite guards, I wasn't too worried about our safety, but I was worried about theirs. So I went out to look for Millard, Naylor, and Brown. I figured they wouldn't shoot up the place just to get even, but I didn't want to take any chances. There wasn't a soul inside as I passed through the village. I found them where I knew I'd find them, in the middle of the lagoon. Naylor and Brown pumping like mad, Millard on the bottom looking for buried treasure. Hey, the war's over. You find your treasure?
Jack found something in the cabin, all right, and we're taking it with us.
Not on my boat, you're not.
No kidding, Dad. We'll cut you in. Split four ways.
You can keep it, but you'll stay on the island. I'm sailing without you.
Hey!
When I hit Nassau, I'll send a police boat out to bring you in for mutiny and piracy. So long, fellas.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Skipper. Wait.
For what?
Oh, we were only kidding. We wouldn't keep it.
Yeah, I knew you wouldn't. Throw your guns overboard.
Sure. Okay.
Okay, now wind up, Millard. I'm coming out. By the time I paddled the little dugout over to our double-ender, Millard was out of the diving suit, and the three of them were looking at a small chest he'd brought up with him.
What do you say, Daniel? I say the girl's loaded. What's a few bucks more? Think what we could do with it, huh?
Nothing doing.
I'm sorry, Skipper. We say yes. Drop your gun.
Where'd you get that?
I got it. You want to find out if it shoots? Just try something.
Yeah.
Drop your gun.
you want to play pirate, you know what happens when we get back to the mainland.
Who said we're going? Look, this is kid stuff. What do you care about her? We don't want trouble. But a guy gets one crack in his life with a thing like this. We could all buy a dozen islands like this.
I'm not arguing. It's your deal. Go ahead. Open it up.
You're in with us?
No.
Come on, Millard, open it. Nuts to him.
Well?
Holy smoke.
Beads. There's nothing but millions of glass beads.
Holy smoke.
Yeah. What happens now?
Beads.
Well, it figures. Trade with the natives, big thing in those days. You want to give me the gun, Millard?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure, Skipper.
Hey, Skipper, we were only kidding.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Well, what are you going to do?
Find you $50 a piece and forget it. Now, what do you say we get that bell up and head back for Miami? We got it up that afternoon. There's nothing else in the hunk except those beads. I guess whoever sank it took everything about 200 years ago. Before we left Amos Island, we got the villagers to help us put the bell up. That was Millard's idea, to kind of square things with Her Majesty and maybe me. And that's about it. Of course, I'm kind of glad about that bell. It comes in handy at certain times.
Dinner, darling, hurry up.
Be right there, Liz. And she makes a good wife. Knits, sews, cooks, has babies. Washes diapers, dishes.
Romance, under the direction of Norman MacDonald, brings you the greatest love stories of today and yesterday.
Romance on Tuned to Yesterday from July 9th, 1951 on CBS. At the time of the broadcast, serving as a summer replacement for the Lux Radio Theater drama series. This is Tuned to Yesterday with an hour of romance. I'm your host, Mark LePionier. Coming up next, the Academy Award Theater adapts the 1945 motion picture Brief Encounter, which was nominated for 3 Academy Awards, including Best Actress in a Leading Role for Celia Johnson. She's not in the radio adaptation, her role taken over by movie actress Greer Garson, who was in no motion pictures at the time of the broadcast as it was heard on CBS on November 20th, 1946.
The House of Squibb presents Academy Award. Tonight, Greer Garson in Brief Encounter.
Arbiter of love affairs. Can you judge a man and a woman? Apply the yardstick of a moral code to their acts? Can you sit alone and aloof and view dispassionately? Well, then you are the judge and the jury. In this story of one man's wife and another woman's husband could never happen to you. For you've never lived a lifetime in one brief encounter. This is the story of Alec Harvey and Laura Jessen and a life lived in the commuter section of a railway station.
This can't last. This misery can't last. I must remember that and try to control myself. I'm going home to Fred. My husband and my family. Nothing lasts, really. Neither happiness nor despair. Not even life lasts very long. Someday I'll be able to look back and say, quite peacefully and cheerfully, how silly I was. No, I don't want that time to come, ever. I want to remember. Every minute. Always. Always to the end of my days.
Ketchup!
matter, dear?
Nothing. It's nothing.
Well, darling, what's wrong? Tell me, please.
Really and truly, it's nothing. I'm just a little run down, that's all. I had a sort of fainting spell at the refreshment room at Milford.
Well, would you like to go to bed?
No, Fred, really, no. I'll sit here by the fire.
All right, darling. You mind if I potter along with this crossword puzzle, then?
Oh, please go ahead. Would you mind if I played some music? Turned on the wireless?
Oh, do. By all means.
Poor Fred. Dear Fred. I don't want you to be hurt. We're a happily married couple. We must never forget that. This is my home. You are my husband. And my children are upstairs in bed. I'm a happily married woman. I was until a few weeks ago. But, oh, Fred, I've been so foolish. I've fallen in love. I'm an ordinary woman. I didn't think such violent things could happen to ordinary people. It all started on an ordinary day in the most ordinary place in the world, the refreshment room at Milford Junction.
I was having a cup of tea. I looked up and saw a man come in from the platform. He turned and I saw his face. It was rather a nice face. And then I gathered up my things and started out. And suddenly something got in my eye. It was a terrible nuisance. It really did bother me. And then he was there.
May I help you?
Oh, thank you. It's only something in my eye.
No, let me look, please. I happen to be a doctor.
Oh, it's very kind of you.
Turn around to the light, please. Now, look up. Now, look down. Ah, keep still. I see it. There.
Oh, what a relief. It was agonizing.
Looks like a bit of grit.
Yes, it was when the express went through. Thank you very much indeed.
The train now arriving on platform 3 for Churley, Lee Green, and...
Lucky for me that you happened to be there.
Anybody could have done it.
Oh, never mind, you did, and I'm really most grateful.
Well, there's my train. I must go. Goodbye.
Goodbye. That's how it all began. Just through me getting a little piece of grit in my eye. I completely forgot the whole incident. At least I thought I had. But the next Thursday, I met him again.
Oh, good morning.
Oh, good morning.
How's the eye?
Oh, perfectly all right. How kind it was of you to take so much trouble.
Oh, it's nothing at all. It's clearing up, I think.
Yes, it's going to be nice.
Well, I must be getting along to the hospital.
And I must be getting along to the grocer's.
What exciting nice relief, don't we? Goodbye.
Goodbye. There was another morning. Coincidence, I told myself. I was having lunch at the Cardoma Cafe. He came in. It was crowded. And he sat at my table. I happened to say that I was going to the pictures as usual that afternoon, and he asked if he could go with me. It seemed so silly to say no, so he did. Walking back to the station, he put his hand under my arm. I didn't notice it then, but I remember it now. What's she like? Your wife?
Madeline? Oh, small, dark, rather delicate.
How funny. I should have thought she'd have been fair.
And, your husband? What's he like?
Medium height, brown hair, kindly, unemotional, and not delicate at all.
I believe you said that proudly.
Did I? We've got time for a cup of tea before our trains go.
Oh, wonderful.
Is tea bad for once?
If this is a professional interview, my fee is a guinea.
Why did you become a doctor?
Oh, that's a long story. Perhaps because I'm a bit of an idealist.
Oh, I think all doctors should have ideals. Otherwise, their work would be unbearable.
Oh, now, surely you're not encouraging me to talk sharp.
Well, why shouldn't you talk sharp?
I'm terribly ambitious, really. Not for myself so much as for my special pigeon.
What is your special pigeon?
Preventive medicine.
Oh, I see.
I'm afraid you don't.
Well, I was just trying to sound intelligent.
You see, most good doctors, especially when they're young, have private dreams. That's the best part of them. Sometimes, though, those get over-professionalized and strangulated. Am I boring you?
I don't quite understand, but you're not boring me.
What I mean is this. All good doctors must primarily be enthusiastic, must have a sense of vocation, a deep-rooted, unsentimental desire to do good.
Yes. Yes, I see that.
Well, obviously, preventing disease is worth 50 ways of curing it. It's concerned with living conditions and hygiene. For instance, my specialty is pneumoconiosis.
Oh, dear.
Oh, well, don't be alarmed. It's simpler than it sounds. It's nothing but a slow process of fibrosis of the lung due to the inhalation of particles of dust.
You suddenly look much younger.
Do I?
Almost like a little boy.
What made you say that?
I don't know. Yes. Yes, I do.
Tell me.
Oh, no. No, I couldn't really. You were saying something about inhaling dust.
Oh, yes. The inhalation of coal dust. That's one specific form of the disease. It's called anthracosis.
What are the others?
Chalicosis. That comes from metal dust. Steelworks, you know.
Yes. Yes, of course. Steelworks.
And silicosis. That's stone dust. Gold mines.
I see. Oh, there's your train.
Yes.
Well, you mustn't miss it.
No.
What's the matter?
No, nothing. Nothing at all, really.
It's been very nice. I've enjoyed my afternoon enormously.
I'm so glad, so have I. I apologize for boring you with these long medical terms.
Oh, I feel dull and stupid not being able to understand more.
Shall I see you again?
Your train is the other platform, isn't it? You'll have to run.
Shall I see you again?
Yes, of course. Perhaps you come over to Ketchworth one Sunday. We'd be delighted.
Please, please.
What is it?
Next Thursday. The same time.
No, I couldn't possibly.
Please. I ask you most humbly.
Where is your train?
All right.
Run.
Goodbye.
I'll be there.
Oh, thank you, my
I stood there watching the red light of his train disappear. Something clutched at my heart, and a chill as of fear passed over me. Fred?
Yes, dear?
Fred, I had lunch with a strange man today. He took me to the movies.
Oh, good for you.
He's awfully nice. He's a doctor.
Fine. I say, darling, it was Richard III who said, "My kingdom for a horse," wasn't it?
Yes, darling.
Oh, I wish he hadn't. It spoils my whole crossword puzzle.
He was waiting early Thursday morning when I arrived. We went to the movies again, and afterwards to the park and the lake. It was a wonderful afternoon. I felt like a young girl again. And then later we were walking back to the station, hand in hand for tea. Milk and sugar.
Thank you. You know what's happened, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I've fallen in love with you.
Yes, I know.
Tell me honestly. Please tell me honestly if what I believe is true.
What do you believe?
That it's the same with you. That you've fallen in love, too.
It sounds so silly.
Why?
I know you so little.
It is true, though, isn't it?
Yes, it's true.
Oh, Laura.
No, Alec, please. Please, we must be sensible. Please help me to be sensible. We must forget we've said what we've said.
Not yet. Not quite yet.
But we must. Don't you see?
Listen, it's too late now to be sensible as all that. It's too late to forget what we said because we know. We both of us known for a long time.
How can you say that? I've only known you for 4 weeks. We only talked for the first time last Thursday week.
Last Thursday week. Has it been a long time for you since then? Answer me truly.
Yes.
How often did you decide that you were never going to see me again?
Several times a day.
So did I.
Oh, Alec.
I love you. I love your wide eyes, the way you smile, and your shyness, and the way you laugh at my jokes.
Please,
I love
don't.
You. I love you. You love me, too. It's no use pretending that it hasn't happened, because it has.
Yes, it has. But it must stop here. Then neither of us free to love each other. There's too much in the way. There's still time if we control ourselves and behave like sensible human beings. There's still time.
There's no time at all.
There's your train.
Yes.
I'll come over to the platform with you.
Oh, Laura.
No, Alec, not here. Someone will see.
I love you so.
Goodbye. Out of the railway carriage window into the dark and watched the dim trees and the telegraph posts sliding by, and through them I saw Alec and me. Alec and me. Perhaps a little younger than we are now, but just as much in love and with nothing in the way. I saw us in Paris in a box at the opera, and then we were in Venice drifting along the Grand Canal in a gondola. With the sound of mandolins coming across the water, I saw us looking over the side of a ship at the sea and the stars, standing on a tropical beach in the moonlight with the palm trees sighing over us. And then the palm trees changed into those pollarded willows by the canal just before the level crossing. And all the silly dreams disappeared. And I got out at Ketchworth and walked home, quiet, soberly, and without wings. Without any wings at all.
Fred, my dear, that week was misery. I went through it in a sort of trance. Odd of you not to have noticed that you were living with a stranger in the house. Thursday came at last. I'd arranged to meet Alec outside the hospital at 12:30.
Hello.
Hello.
I thought you wouldn't come. I've been thinking all week that you wouldn't come.
I didn't mean to, really. But here I am. We went to the Royal Hotel for lunch. It all seemed very grand. He actually ordered a bottle of champagne. And when I protested, he said that we were only middle-aged once. As we were going out together, he said that he had a surprise for me. And if I could wait in the lounge for 5 minutes, he'd show me what it was. Suddenly, out of the dining room, came that rich, made-up Mary Norton. She must have been in the dining room all the time. And seen Alec and me, and the champagne and everything.
Laura! So it was you after all. I peered and peered and just couldn't be sure.
I never saw you at all. How awful of me. I expect it was the champagne. I can't drink champagne at all, but Alec insisted.
Alec? Alec who, dear?
Alec Harvey, of course. Dr. Harvey. Well, surely you remember the Harveys?
Well, I've known them for years. No, I don't think I haven't.
Well, he'll be back in a moment. You'll probably recognize him when you peer very closely. Oh, here he is now. Alec, you remember Mrs. Norton, don't you?
I'm afraid I don't.
It's no use, Laura. We've never seen each other before in our lives. I'm sure we haven't.
Oh, how absurd. Well, I made certain that he and Madeline were there when you dined with us just before Christmas last year.
Oh, perhaps. Well, I must be going. Goodbye, Dr. Harvey.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, my dear. I do so envy you your champagne.
That was awful.
Oh, never mind.
She'd been watching us all through lunch. Oh, dear.
Oh, forget it. Come out and look at the surprise.
No, no, Alec, I'm going home.
Oh, but you can't. I've got a little car out there. We'll go for a drive.
No, Alec, no, let me go. I've got to go. I've got to.
Laura. Darling, I've been looking for you everywhere.
Please go away. Please go away.
I've watched every train. I can't let you go like this.
You must. It'll be better. Really, it will.
Laura. Could you really say goodbye and never see me again?
Yes. If you'd help me.
I love you, Laura. I shall always love you until the end of my life. I can't look at you now because I know something. I know that this is the beginning of the end. Not the end of my loving you, but the end of our being together. But not quite yet, darling. Not quite yet.
No, darling. Not quite yet.
I know about the strain of our different lives. Our lives apart from each other. The feeling of guilt of doing wrong is too strong, isn't it? Too great a price to pay for the happiness we'd have together. I know all this. It's the same for me, too.
You can look at me now. I'll be all right.
Let's be very careful. Let's prepare ourselves. A sudden break now, however brave and admirable, would be too cruel. We can't do such violence to our hearts and minds.
Very well.
I'm going away.
I see.
But not quite yet.
Please. Not quite yet.
I want you to promise me something.
What is it?
Promise me that however unhappy you are, and however much you think things over, you'll meet me again next Thursday.
Where?
Outside the hospital. 12:30.
All right, I promise.
Train for Ketchworth is now arriving on platform 3.
You're not angry with me, are you?
No, I'm not angry. I don't think I'm anything, really. I just feel tired.
Forgive me?
Forgive you? For what?
For everything. For meeting you in the first place. For taking a piece of grit out of your eye. For loving you. For bringing you so much misery.
I'll forgive you. If you'll forgive me.
Thursday.
Our very last together in all our lives. I met him, we drove out through the country. And we didn't talk much. I felt numb, sort of, and hardly alive. And then we were back walking through the station. And my mind was saying, this is the last time, Alec. The last time. The last time.
Are you all right, darling?
Yes, I'm all right.
I wish I could think of something to say.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Not anything. I mean...
I'll miss my train and wait to see you into yours.
No, no, please don't. I'll come over to your platform with you. I'd rather.
All right.
Do you think we should ever see each other again?
I don't know. Not for years, anyhow. I'm going to South Africa.
Oh. Funny. Your children will be all grown up. Mine, too. I wonder if they'll ever meet, know each other.
Couldn't I write to you just once in a while?
Oh, Annie, please. You know, we promised.
All right, dear. Oh, I do love you so terribly. I love you with all my heart and soul.
I want to die. If only I could die.
If you died, you'd forget me. I want to be remembered.
We still have a few minutes.
Why, Laura, what a lovely surprise, my dear. Oh, I've been shopping till I'm dropping. My feet are nearly falling off, my throat's parched.
Mary, can you remember Dr. Harvey?
Oh, yes, of course.
How do you do?
There's your train.
Yes, I know.
Aren't you coming with us?
No, I go in the opposite direction. My practice isn't Shirley.
Oh, I see.
I'm a general practitioner at the moment.
Dr. Harvey is going to Africa next week.
Oh, how thrilling.
Train now arriving on platform 4, the 534 for Tully, Lee Green, and Langdon.
I must go.
Yes, you must go. Goodbye. I felt the touch of his hand on my shoulder for a moment. Then he walked away. Away. Out of my life forever. I prayed he'd come back. Pretending he'd forgotten something. Something. I wanted to see him again. Just one instant. The minutes went by. Then I thought I wouldn't be able to bear it another moment. I thought, all I have to do is to walk in front of the train and keep my eyes up. I meant to do it, Fred.
tragedy right on the edge. But I turned and went back to where Mary was finishing her tea. And then I nearly fainted.
Laura. Laura.
Yes, Fred, dear?
Whatever your dream was, it wasn't a very happy one, was it?
No.
Is there anything I can do to help?
You always help.
You've been a long time away. Thank you for coming back to me.
Oh, Fred. Fred!
Fresh, alive, fit-as-a-fiddle feeling, switch tomorrow to Squibb Dental Cream. Next Wednesday, another great story. The House of Squibb will present Academy Awards starring Ronald Colman in Lost Horizon.
The Academy Award Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS broadcast from November 20th, 1946. Greer Garson, the star in an adaptation of the 1945 film Brief Encounter. And that brings to a close this hour of romance on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.